You don't have to make any new notes. This is just a recap of where we were from yesterday evening. Generally speaking, we're having a war between the minor league school and the middle league school. There's a fight going on. And the fight has started off from the middle league school saying, you know, nothing exists in truth. Nothing exists truly. Nothing exists by definition. Nothing exists ultimately. And then they're saying that about all three categories that the minor league school accepts. They're saying that about dependent things. They're saying that about constructs. And they're saying that about totality or emptiness. So they're saying that with regard to all three groups that the minor league school asserts. So when we get to page 48, about the sixth line from the bottom, the question arises, well then why does the debate rage around specifically Shenlong? Why is the debate concentrating on things that change, on things that are dependent? And again, on the last, very last line of page 48, the answer is that Kepa's meaning, great thinkers, realize that this is where the battle will be won or lost, that what we have to concentrate on are changing things, because those are the basis for all the, for the establishing of all the other qualities of the minor school. So that's why we are concentrating on Shenlong, the main focus of the debate.
Guess
I was asking you to think about a certain issue and then you have to come up with an answer, it sounds like, okay? He's saying, you think about it. By the way, he did also mention that we are talking today in the context of the abbreviation of Ayin Sambhak. You got to tell him. So he says, you guys think about it and you give me an answer. We have a case here where the consequence group of the middle way school has made a blanket statement to cover all three attributes or all three groups. They said that nothing exists by definition. Nothing exists truly. Nothing exists ultimately. And they're talking about both all three categories. Dependent things, they're talking about labeled things or nominal things, and then they're talking about constructs, and then they're talking about emptiness and stuff. So in your opinion, you know, what would make more sense for the minor league school when they mount their attack on the middle way school? What would you expect in your own mind for them to mount their attack on? What if you were just talking to somebody and saying, you know, the middle way school has just denied that any of the three categories exist by definition, and then you're going to tell somebody, now the minor league school is attacking them. What do you think a person would naturally think the minor league school was going to attack? I mean, just anybody would think that? Or? Shouldn't the minor league school properly criticize the middle way's view of the other two as well? The other two categories as well?
would think that since the minor school bases its other two categories on the definition of kin law, and from kin law gets their other two categories, gets the fact that gets their kundas and gets their emptiness, they would have to come at it through
kin law. Shenwan tonne chene ma do shenwan di dak shire shenwan se adi kunda ki shire shenwan se adi yontu ki shire
toda re ta toda re
shenwan ni tonne toda de in this he's talking like just a normal person came up and said you know what would I mean not you're saying that because of yesterday's class but if you just heard a presentation you know somebody said the middleweight school is saying that none of the three categories is by definition now what do you think the minor school is saying
All
the things that exist by definition, I guess, because they're around us. She wanted Dashi Yimba Dan So Yimma Mate, and I think Yayin, you can get a Manche at the Shaman in Sunday. She wanted
to do it. What a kind of song, Lua? Tell you, Shaman Rangi Teniman, you want to break the Teniman, Kunda Rangi Teniman. What is song? She wanted.
But he repeats that the Manimika Prasangika have attacked. They've said all three, one by one, they said this one doesn't exist by definition, this one doesn't exist by definition, this one doesn't exist by definition. They've made a blanket statement specifically covering all three.
Well, all they're going to do is screw one, and that would be their
problem. Shenwan de Rangitiniki Drupa Tuna, that's Shola, Shemini de Drupa Tuna. That's Shetan de Shemtan de Samlo de Goma de Ane.
But
don't forget that my main question I said, if you're going to talk, you know, what is it that just Katuk in Tibetan means, you know, directly that the mind only school has to debate about? I mean, if it's just a direct, sudden response to the middle way school, won't they talk about all three groups?
Tanya itu apa tanya?
Dah siawan saya di taksi insan dan papa ni kekasih kunda dan wonder ni kita so dan soksing lah sih.
Tadi dia ni cuma tanya mah.
Okay. Nama ni asli nama.
Tanju eh siawan lagi sini macam tu sesungguhnya. Tiada senda ni tata tangan semua jangan tak.
I admit that, you know, among their other statements, the middleweight school has said that dependent things don't exist by definition. And I admit that the mind-only school would have to attack that.
Did you ask? Thank you, eh? You want to bring the thing you want to prove you are it? That's in the middle of the tongue, eh? Yeah, good, so that's it.
You know, but simultaneously, the Midway School has also said that emptiness or totality itself doesn't exist by definition. Wouldn't that warrant like some kind of whimper of response from the mind only school? You know, shouldn't they at least complain about that a little bit?
But isn't emptiness defined by the object emptiness?
No, we're talking now about
depending things
that yongduki shir jopati. No, he says he understands that, you know, Shenwang, changing things are the basis on which you establish the emptiness of the changing things. But he was just emptiness in and of itself, wouldn't they want to attack that?
From one point of view, emptiness sort of feels like it's a fact. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the someone might say, well, okay, dependent things don't exist by definition, but emptiness exists by definition. It is the absence of
Mi kashi sama na nende chi yon singa le kashi shenwa do exist by definition and realists don't. They might think that.
Like a mind only would say, okay, I'll concede to you that shenwa don't exist by definition. Not that they, okay, but emptiness still does exist by definition because it's a fact. Nothing would change.
Yondu say the Dindam Dema Yintang. That Peja and Sami Samunalia, because the Dilia Ranki Teniki, Madus Sena, Digi Mare, and she wanted the Ranki Teniki, Madus Sena, Peja, Digi, Samla Dine Kosigre, Sam Samiti Lola. Prasana, Yondu Sabi, Dindam Dhamma Yinsan, sensitive factor could more likely exist by definition. Dindam Dhamma Yinsan, Rangi Tene, Jugure, to have trouble to Tene. And he said, one does not test of such a way.
Tell it, Tanja, Tanju, Tatanda Tikons, Tanju, Yondu Rangi Tene Madu, Laki Ara, and the mission, Tigger, Tigger, Tigger.
So we'll go backwards a little bit, we'll backtrack a little bit. When the Manimika school says that emptiness itself or totality doesn't exist by definition, is that okay with the Manimika school? Do they have a problem with that or not?
They both agree with it.
They both agree
with it. I'll repeat it. When the middle way school says that emptiness itself doesn't exist by definition, does the Manimika school have a problem with that?
Yes.
They say emptiness.
So based on that, what you just agreed to, wouldn't it make logic? Wouldn't it be logical that the minor way school would want to attack the middle way school when the middle way school said emptiness doesn't exist for justice? So don't they have to be positing two? Don't they have to be fighting the middle way on 2 points now?
If
the
Shenwan exists by definition, then the emptiness of
the Shenwan
must also.
That's true. I mean, that's generally true. But still, the middle way school has taken the time and the care to specifically single out these two different things. Shenwan's dependent things and emptiness itself, and say of each one separately that they don't exist by definition. Doesn't this warrant two separate attacks, counterattacks by the minority?
If they prove that Shenwan exists by definition, then haven't they also proved that the emptiness of that Shenwan also exists by definition?
Sem Tampe, Shenwan Rangitini Duk Tumna, Di Shwalaya Yondu Rangitini Duk Tumna. It's true what you say. It is true that if they can establish that changing things existed by definition, then automatically, in a sense, they'd be establishing that the emptiness which pertained to them existed by definition. But, I repeat, given the fact that the middle way school has taken the time to single out both of these different attributes of groups and say that they don't exist by definition, doesn't it warrant at least a mention by the middle way school that, you know, by the way, you're also wrong about emptiness. It doesn't exist. It's not. It does exist by definition. Shouldn't they at least make some kind of peep about it?
Yes.
This gets us back to where we were last evening, actually. They really should attack on 2 points, right? They really should attack on 2 points. Obviously, they don't attack on the third point, because they do believe that the constructs don't exist by definition. So they're not going to attack on that point. But on the other 2 points, shouldn't they make some kind of attack? And then Jetson Kapa himself says at the bottom of page 48, you know, they should have, you know, in a real sense, they should have said something about it, but they didn't. Now, why is that? And that's why Jetson Kapa got on to saying that thing about Shenwan being the linchpin of their philosophy, you know, and that being the most crucial thing and the most important thing. And that's where Jetson Kapa got into starting to talk about that. Because he too was wondering why they didn't attack on 2 points.
Did this one? What are they? That thing you don't understand. You know, I'm not understanding. You know, I'm not understanding.
Now, what about that third attribute, which is constructs? When the middle way school says they don't exist by definition, is this something about which this mind only school should fight with them or not?
Yeah,
Before you go jumping and saying that the mind-only school accepts that constructs don't exist by definition already, don't forget that among those constructs there are different flavors or different versions of those constructs. Some of the constructs are like all those unchanging things like empty space itself. You know, that's a construct. Perhaps they could say it doesn't exist by definition. We have to talk about that. Okay, we have to talk about what would they mean when they said it doesn't exist by definition. Okay, but don't forget that the main construct being talked about here is this non-existent construct, the construct which is actually a thing which doesn't exist, which is called the gacha, which is what emptiness is empty of. And then don't forget that in the mind-only school, that refers to the fact that something like a water pitcher is not the thing which is given the name water pitcher by definition. Okay, if someone came along and posited a water pitcher, which could be given the name water pitcher by definition, which deserves the name water, which deserves to be what is called water pitcher by definition, that doesn't exist. That is the ultimate thing of which emptiness is devoid. That thing doesn't exist. And don't forget, that's the kunta we're talking about here. That's the main construct that we're talking about here, and that doesn't exist. That thing doesn't exist. So you get into trouble if you start saying that doesn't exist by definition, or doesn't exist by definition, or something. Be careful about just leaping in and saying, oh, all constructs don't exist by definition. Because the main one being spoken about here is in the category of constructs, which refers to something that doesn't even exist. Generally, I don't have a problem with you saying that, actually. Okay? You say the constructs. Mind only school says that constructs don't exist by definition. Now, okay, let's say I don't have a problem with you saying that constructs, that the mind only school says that constructs don't exist by definition. But, and does the middle way school also say that? The same phrase, they use the same wording. Yes, they do. They say constructs including, and along with nothing, everything else in the world, don't exist by definition. Okay. But when you take the middle way school saying constructs don't exist by definition, when you take the minor way school saying constructs don't exist by definition, are these in sync? Yeah. Do they match each other? But you know, just as a gut reaction, you know, if a minor league school guy is sitting there and listening to a middle way school guy, you know, and the middle way school guy says, We believe that no constructs in the universe exist by definition. They wouldn't like lead to an attack at that moment, right? They'd say like, yeah, sounds pretty good to me, you know. Until they got into what it meant, you know, they wouldn't like lead to attack the minority, the middle way school.
What in it?
But don't forget how Jetson Kapa has expressed himself here, which is a little tricky, okay? He, at the bottom of page 48, Jetson Kapa has been saying, you know, when you think about it, the mind-only school had a problem with the middle way school saying that dependent things didn't exist by definition. And that's a little strange because they didn't seem to have a problem with both. You see, he's saying, no, why don't they go on the attack on both points? You know, why don't they go on the attack about the middle way school saying that totality or emptiness doesn't exist by definition. Now, why is it that they didn't go on the attack on both? Okay. Yeah, it's interesting to note that they should have even attacked the third one, right? As Chilton was pointing out. Okay, so he said, you know, generally speaking, if the mind-only school were sensitive to what the middle way school really means, when they say constructs don't exist by definition, then they should have left to, they should have had a problem with that too, and they should have said something about, they should have made an objection there too, because what the middle way school means when they say that constructs don't exist by definition is that when you go looking for the construct that is given the name construct, independent of the name construct, you can't find anything. You will never find anything. If you go looking for the thing that gets the name construct, you will never find anything. You know, you can go down to level after level after level and you won't find anything that really exists. Now, if the mind-only school were sensitive to the fact that that's what the middle-way school means when they say constructs don't exist by definition, then I guess what I was sort of siding with Chilton, you know, they should have, then maybe they should have attacked that as well. You know, there should be a question why they didn't attack that either. So really, even though this particular chunk of text on the bottom of page 48 I've explained yesterday, and you know, just from the wording here, there's no more to be said about that. You know, you understand what the wording means. But if you go into this with an analytical state of mind and you examine this whole exchange, this last exchange, there are all those issues here, you know, and they are not evident, but they are here, and we talked about them. Now there's one more issue here to talk about, we have to amplify on that last point here, which is that the mind-only school, in essence, the debater from the mind-only school side is saying, you know, I could have come and debated you today about that last thing you said too, that constructs don't exist by definition. Because I understand that that's not what you, I understand that when you say constructs don't exist by definition, you mean something quite different than what I say when I say constructs don't exist by definition. What you, middle way people, mean when you say constructs don't exist by definition is that when you look for the thing that was named that particular construct, you can't find that thing. You know, no matter how much you search for that thing, you can't find it. That's what you, middle way people, mean when you say constructs don't exist by definition. I understand that. I'm the mind-only guy, right? I understand that's what you mean. I know that's what you mean. But today, I choose to concentrate on Shenwang with you. You know, I choose, you know, I could have debated you even about that, because I understand that you don't mean the same thing that I mean when you say that. But you know, let's between us, in this particular realm, let's concentrate on changing things, because that's where the fight should take place, because that's where the decisions will be made. We'll start on page 40. Now we're ready to go on to new stuff. Page 49, line 2. Okay, starts out by saying, now here's more stuff from the review.
Okay, ဘုရားတတိတိကွာရှင်ကြောင့်ငုံကြီးလားကိုင်းတာငုံကြီးတော့ဘာရှင်ပါတယ်တတိတိကွာရှင်ကြောင့်ငုံကြီးလားကိုင်းတာငုံကြီးတော့ဘာရှင်ပါတယ်တတိတိကွာရှင်ကြောင့်ငုံကြီးလားကိုင်းတာငုံကြီးတော့ဘာရှင်ပါတယ်တတိတိကွာရှင်ကြောင့်ငုံကြီးလားကိုင်းတာငုံကြီးတော့ဘာရှင်ပါတယ်တတိတိကွာရှင်ကြောင့်ငုံကြီးလားကိုင်းတာငုံကြီးတော့ဘာရှင်ပါတယ်တတိတိကွာရှင်ကြောင့်ငုံကြီးလားကိုင်းတာငုံကြီးတော့ဘာရှင်ပါတယ်တ
we're on to page 48, line 2, you know. This is from the abbreviation. Geshe-la says, you know, the point has been covered before. Again, Jetsun Kapa is taking out a specific chunk from the original text by Master Sangha, and then he's going to be explaining it later. But again, he says, essentially the same point is being made as was made before in previous sections. We have an unusual expression here, which is Kuntapi ngō nidu ngumba shemba, which means to have a almost like a fancified belief in the essence of the attribution. Okay, something like that. To have some kind of fanciful belief in the essence of the attribution. And this is said to apply to both dependent things, shenwangs, and also apply to the emptiness of those things, which is yomdu, the totality of those things. Okay? So there's some kind of fanciful belief you have about them. What is the nature of that fanciful belief that relates to their constructedness, right? It is the following. If you take, for example, an example of a shenwang, okay, of a dependent thing, and you go back to plain old tashi, okay, we go back to tashi, okay? And the mind is looking, this is a state of mind which is focusing on tashi, focusing on the fact that tashi is the object which is given the name tashi. Tashi as the object of what receives the name tashi. The fact that tashi is what's called tashi, okay? Does that exist by definition or not? It does not exist by definition, but this state of mind believes it does exist by definition. So it's holding tashi to be truly existent. That's what it means in this school, to be the tendency to hold tashi as being truly existent. It's to look on tashi as being the object of the name tashi by definition, okay? And that is dondo, okay? That's seeing something there where there is nothing there. It's attributing existence by definition to the fact that tashi is what's called tashi. Okay? And that doesn't exist by definition. But this is a dondok or overrating state of mind that believes that there does exist that existence by definition where there is no existence by definition. So, and this same description can be applied to emptiness. Okay? If you focus on tashi again and you think about the emptiness of tashi, if you think about tashi as the basis of the emptiness of tashi, and the emptiness of tashi being what we call the emptiness of tashi, by definition, okay, the fact that the emptiness of tashi is what's given the name emptiness of tashi, does that exist by definition or not? This state of mind believes that that does exist by definition. Again, with relation to the emptiness of tashi, it's a state of mind which is seeing something there where there is nothing there, which is called dondo. Okay, so it's again another tendency to see things as being truly existent when they're not. It's the dondo version of that. It's the version which is seeing something there where there really is nothing there. So this same state of mind is doing the same thing, whether we're talking about dependent things or whether we're talking about the emptiness which pertains to those dependent things. This is a state of mind that's seeing that the fact that they are called what they are, the fact that they are what receives the name that they are given, they believe it to exist by definition. In both cases, it's the same. This state of mind is the same. Okay, both with changing things and with the emptiness that pertains to those changing things. So again, it's just about the same argument that we had before, and this is easy. You got it from the other day, right? No problem, right? We've met a lot of tashis, haven't we? That's why you start giggling when the guy stood up and gave me a 10 to 5. Hi, I'm tashi. The next one is easy, line 5, page 49. They begin to describe the process of discounting again. And here, discounting meaning you deny the existence of something which actually is there. And here, it's to deny the ngonyi here meaning a self-nature, having a nature of its own, right? Both dependent things and the emptiness which pertains to those very dependent things they have a quality of existing by their very nature, meaning in this school, by definition, right, or truly. Okay, so any state of mind in which you focused on dependent things or you focused upon their totality or their emptiness, and any state of mind that looked at those two things and said, about those things which really do have their own nature, if that state of mind said they don't have their own nature, that would be discounting their real nature. That would be discounting something. That would be saying something doesn't exist where something really does exist. And in the mind-only school, that would be saying existence by definition, which really does pertain to those two things, doesn't pertain to those two things. Okay?
Awesome.
This is a little tricky, but it's really beautiful. Okay, when you look at Dashigen, so basically what's going to happen here is you're going to get the same formula where Arya Sangha is going to say, if you can, from the mind-only point of view, eliminate this extreme and eliminate this extreme, then you arrive at the middle and you establish what we mean by emptiness. So the way in which Gisla said it is really beautiful. I'll try to capture it, okay? It's that the fact, this is what a mind-only school person would say, okay? The fact that Dashi as what is called Dashi, okay? The fact that Dashi is what is given the name Dashi, that fact doesn't exist by definition, according to mind-only school. That very non-existence by definition is, in this school, Dashi's emptiness. Okay, the fact that it's not true about Dashi, that the fact that he is what is called Dashi could exist by definition, the fact that that's not true is Dashi's emptiness. Okay, so and that emptiness which you thereby derive does exist by definition. Okay, so that's kind of cool. So, we'll say it again. The fact that Dashi is what is given the name Dashi doesn't exist by definition is Dashi's emptiness. Okay? And that emptiness which you thereby derive is something which does exist by definition. Now saying it in exactly that way automatically eliminates those two overrating and discounting state of mind that we just talked about, because those two states of mind hold the opposites in each case. those two states of mind think that in the first case, the fact that dashi is what's given the name dashi exists by definition. It's reverse, right? And that state of mind also thinks that the emptiness which dashi has doesn't exist by definition, right? So then those two states of mind are eliminated by that correct mind-only description that I went through first. And that description eliminates or avoids the two extremes. And then, says Master Sangha, you get in the middle, after all is said and done, nice, perfect emptiness according to the mind only.
Tata kotak devojin around the sing, stumbling on the shidara, salmogan, kind of love devoj, kachavar, dena. Tendam belula, tendam belula, and you won't do this. Rangi tingi kimato, lamenti kimato, you won't do the rangi ting too much. What is it? That is the word. That's my second.
To put it into very, very simple words, okay, to boil it down to the most simple common denominator. The mind-only school is coming up and saying totality, meaning emptiness, okay? Now I'm going to stop saying meaning emptiness, okay? Totality is something which, if you come along and say it does not exist by definition, you are wrong. Okay, that's all. The mind-only school is just trying to say that. Totality is such that if you came along and said it didn't exist by definition, you would be wrong.
What is it? What is it?
Then the wording of the text is, I think it's line 8 from the bottom on page 49, it says, and so these last two natures, these last two very natures, last in Tibetan can mean first and last, it can mean the two on the end, you see what I mean, or depending on how you look at it, but anyway, it's referring to dependent things and their emptiness, okay, their totality, okay, and it says here, anyone who came along and said that those things don't exist by definition, would be guilty of doing discounting of the discounting state of mind. That's the point of those two lines.
What do you say? Then they song this. Ranking the good song this. Chang Sadang, Dini Dubuki Tatang, Tipungu and Chico. Tangarton Garrison, Chang Sanala, Dondok Tang, Gundim Numerous, when the Kasangama Singhua, Dondok Gundim Numerous, the day they did shop. That in it.
Seven lines in the bottom, page 49, at the end of the line, Jetagab is pointing out that if you look how Bodhisattva level has explained these points, and if you look at how the abbreviation has explained these points, then they really boil down to the same thing. Now what is he talking about when they say explain these two points? He's talking about the description of overrating and discounting as it appears in the Bodhisattva level, and the description of overrating and discounting states of mind as it appears in the abbreviation, and then the corresponding treatment on how to stop or avoid those states of mind and how to avoid those two extremes. So in the way that the Bodhisattva level presents overrating and how to stop it, the way that the Bodhisattva levels present discounting and how to stop it, and then the way that the abbreviated presentation addresses those same issues is pretty much the same as
Jetagab.
Uh,
in this song to my enemy in this Sumba, turn up by you able to see it on the Sumba, that is English weather. That is Tiki, Timmy, Tabby, Tiki, Timmy, to you, Jew to maybe done, easy. Sayako Shawari, Tayo, turn tumber, Yupa, young, tumbling over large, turn them to Yupa Kola, Shawan, turn them to Yupa Kola. こめてらんのこんでれ。ま、そうあ、てけれそう。たんだみしびてれそう。ま、とらんぎてにじくばて、てれまそう。ね。あ、とはなら軽そうあれせな。こんこんでてもそうよんでたね。らんぎてにしてれば。さてかばるじゅな。てんだみぐこばね、やたらやと。てらともくずりぐにこばちゃうそう。お、のかおね、てらともくずりぐにこばにとわね。てかかわいな。あてもばにぐにぐに。らん、たてなとはただしゃまてらんじゃなる。 え、そう、シェモニ、たまに、てらてらてら。じゃあ、これはどこをしても、これは、そう、シェフテラス。そう。お、チェ、ジュン、チェ、ゲ、ヤバテラ。何ヤバテラ。シェモニ、たまに、ランキテニキ、ヨパラ、ケマドロシェ、ランデラ、ホテル、ソンデエゼ。ドレナー、ランキテニトワー、ジケテレバマド。何タンバラシン、ケテレバマレス。
The actual wording that Jetsun Kapa uses in that last point was that, you know, the presentation of the overrating state of mind and the presentation of discounting state of mind and the way to avoid these two is the same. He said, is one and the same. Okay. He used the words in Tibetan, chiko, meaning are one and the same. So certain debaters have come into this point and said, okay, hey, let's turn back to page 37, go back to specifically how Bodhisattva levels describe the discounting state of mind and recall that I think it's around line 5 on page 37. Recall that in describing the discounting state of mind in the Bodhisattva levels, the Bodhisattva levels has used the wording, the discounting state of mind looks at dependent objects which are in truth things that exist ultimately and thinks they, and discounts them by saying they don't exist ultimately. It uses the expression exists ultimately or doesn't exist ultimately. Then when you get to the abbreviation of Master Sangha, for example, page 49, and you're talking about the ninth line from the bottom, when it talks about the same discounting state of mind, it says, in truth, changing objects exist by definition, and this state of mind claims or believes that they don't exist by definition. So in Bodhisattva levels, they've used the phrase, exist ultimately or not exist ultimately. In the abbreviation, they've used the phrase exists by definition or doesn't exist by definition. You can't say Jetsun Kapa that they are one and the same. Okay? These are different phrases. They may mean the same thing, but these are, you said one and the same, Chiko, line six from the bottom, page 49. They're not one and the same. And then if you're going to get into debate about that, you got to come up and say, oh, what Jetsun Kapa meant was Jun Chiko, meaning they amount to the same thing, or they have the same meaning, or, you know, they have the same intent, or they work out, or they end up in the same, meaning the same thing. And so if you got into a debate about that, you better be ready to address that issue. It doesn't mean one and the same, it means one and the same meaning, or one and the same intent, or one and the same point. Okay? That's all. これ、天井で漫画やろうま。漫画で言ってたま、やぎやぎって言ってた。シャマ、シャマってそう。さ、て、てな、てくれてな、てやぎてきて。シャマでれ、まんにてやら。ちくよんがる。た、かんがん、ディディ、ただやっぽ、ただんち、はこに、せんなれんげ、かれて、ちわたんぐるだ。やげ、いいすな、シャマでれ、まんにて、かれて、ちわたんぐるだ。なになに。てたんぐるだ。てね、しねやちくし、けちゃじ、まらんてきよ。あ、これ、ちく、ちゃんじゃんしゃちわ。たんだくがん、たん、たんね、ねち。 The point I'm trying to make here, I'm not trying to be nitpicky. I'm not just trying to bust your buns or something like that. What I'm trying to say is that if a person really gets to know this text well, you know, as you should, and then when you think about this book, you're thinking of it in one big ecological whole. You know, you in your mind you see the whole book from beginning to end. You know, people memorize it in this monastery, and people, they conceptualize the whole book as one big object. And then if you're like, get to a point like that with this particular book, then it should occur to you, you know, certain issues should come up in your mind, like, you know, when I memorized the first part, it was using this kind of descriptions exist ultimately. And then when I got down later, it started using different descriptions existing by definition. I think the book might be trying to, maybe the book is changing slightly, maybe the author of the book is starting to introduce some internal inconsistencies, you know. First he starts out in the first part of his book using these kind of words, later on he starts using these kind of words. I think there might be some inconsistency here. Far from being inconsistent, you're supposed to think, well, you know what, they boil down to the same thing. And then Jetsu Kapa comes and says, yeah, you know what, they boil down to the same thing. So that's why they're making the point like that. A sensitive student who really grocks this whole book should start to wonder why different phrases are being used for the same ideas. And then they should come to a conclusion at this particular point, which is why I guess we'll have to spend time on it, that they boil down to the same thing. If you don't think about these things carefully and make up your own mind about them, you know, with your own thinking process, then when someone came up to you and said, you know, why did Jetsu Kapa use one kind of phrasing early on in the book and later on he used another phrasing on later on in the book, you would be put in the position of saying, I don't know, go ask Jetsu Kapa.
You'd be
in that point.
He doesn't want you to be in that position.
And then Jetsu Kapa is going to go back to the actual wording of the abbreviation and start to, you know, go through the wording of the quotation and help you out with different concepts. At some point in that text, in the wording of it, it says, constructs don't exist. And the state of mind of overrating looks at constructs that don't exist and thinks that they do exist. Okay, so how do you explain that in the mind-only school? Right, from the mind-only school's point of view, it cannot be saying that state of mind looks at constructs that don't exist and thinks that they do exist. It couldn't be saying that because no, they don't think that. Right? So it must mean again that state of mind looks at constructs that don't exist by definition and believes that they do exist by definition or ultimately. Okay, and that's what it means. Now, Jetsu Kapa isn't satisfied with just saying that. He says, and I'll prove to you that it can't be saying that constructs don't exist, because I'll show you a quotation in the abbreviation where it says specifically the constructs do exist. Remember that in the actual wording of the abbreviation, all it says is they don't exist. It doesn't say they don't exist ultimately.
Ain't But I think the Jana could dial the chest on a pomba, she would judge you with him. Pomba, the chest on a pomba, or a pomba, then the top party, she would be bad. But hey, what about your carta? When did you buy your money? What about your kangi? Number two, Yaparito, Mepare, Kotuni, Yaparito, Mepare, Yapala, Ota, Yapata, Mepa, Talen, Tony Tangle, Tapola, Chinesa, Ren on a day, Tony, this one, Kandum developed the Pumafrana, Chetisa, Pumbashi, the Taju, Tushiba, Dailam, Topala, Pumbara, Pumbazi, the Topati.
This is kind of difficult, okay? The actual wording is page 49, fourth line from the bottom. It says, starts out by saying Rumba Topa. Rumba Topa means generally the process of making a construction. Here, Geshe-la says, read it as the constructions themselves, meaning kundak, okay, constructs themselves. Deda, ming kang dang, numba jipa kangi, it says, which are focused on, or which are labeled, or which are applied by, it says here, names and expressions. No, names and expressions. Here, the word names means verbalization. In other words, when you call a vase, that's a verbalization, okay? So, the idea that you have when you call a vase, the mental image, in a sense, that you have when you call a vase, the construct that arises when a vase is called a vase, through the use of the verbalization vase. Okay? And then the second half of that is the construct which arises through thinking of a vase as a vase, which is sort of like a mental naming process, okay? A mental labeling process. So whether it's the fact that you're applying verbalizations or verbalizations to an object and thereby creating some kind of construct, or whether it's that you're thinking of an object in a certain way, thinking of an object as what it is and thereby creating another kind of construct, okay? So now you have the abbreviation of Arya Sangha saying, hey, look, think about those constructs that you make either verbally or those constructs that you make mentally through your constructing state of mind, okay? Now I have a question for you. Do those exist or do they not exist? Okay, the question here is, think about those things and tell me, do they exist or do they not exist? That's the question. It's a question posed by the abbreviation itself. Now we're going to get an answer. That's a landing on
the side. What is it? 他也来你
The abbreviation of Arya Sangha answers its own question, okay, in the following words, starting from 49, second line from the bottom. It says, nominally speaking, they do. Ultimately speaking, they don't. Which means they do. Okay, so it's this whole thing, you know, nominally speaking, yes, those constructs do exist. Do they exist ultimately? No, we never said that. But nominally speaking, they do exist. Now, it's interesting because this is the first time distinction has been made by mine only, okay, but they also make this distinction, right? So nominally speaking, yeah, those two kinds of constructs do exist. Ultimately speaking, no, they don't exist. Okay, and that's their answer. So that proves, what? That the mind only school, and specifically this particular book, the abbreviation, does believe that those things do exist, so they couldn't have meant what they said when they said don't exist.
What? 他等到滚大火 Yeah, turn tambani ting when you may but you just turn tambani mess you have a turn tambara mess rangi tomorrow may be deluge when a true one.
So what does it mean at the minoist school when they say, yeah, they do exist nominally, but they don't exist ultimately? What does it mean for them when they say that? So go back to Gisla, go back to everything we've been through, go back pretty far, reach back way back there and pull out what they mean. What a mind-only school person would mean when they say, oh, those constructs do exist nominally, but they don't exist ultimately. What they mean when they say those constructs do exist nominally is that they are something which the mind has constructed. Okay? They are the result of a construction. You know, the mind, constructing state of mind, has created them or constructed them. So in that sense, they do exist nominally. Okay? They are something that has been imagined or thought of. Okay? And in that sense, they do exist in this school nominally. But they don't exist ultimately. Now, what do they mean when they say it doesn't exist ultimately? You guys remember from way back when, not existing ultimately means they do not exist from their own side through any unique way of being of their own. Okay? That's in this school what it means not to exist ultimately. So in this school, that's what they mean when they say do exist nominally, don't exist ultimately.
Okay.
I'll give you an illustration based on my current understanding of that. Or I'm not sure if it's another
illustration.
I'll give an example on the same word back, okay? If you have a guy who's a master driver of car, right? Like a really, really good car driver. Is it enough that they just know how to shoot down a road straight in forward gear, you know? Keep going, you know, just straight, you know. Is that enough to call the guy a master driver? No, expert driver. Right? No, to be a really expert driver, and it seems to be saying, especially in India, you know, when you get into a really tight situation on the road, you better know how to back up just right. You know, you have to be an expert backer-upper as well. You got to be able to look over your shoulder and drive straight backwards pretty fast. There are times when you need to do that. And I think, and then he's comparing that to a good scripturalist. Okay, you better be able to go back and find the things you need right away and apply them to where you are now. I don't have to tie up the example for you because you know what I'm talking about. If you go through a scripture like a guy who's just barreling down a road in forward gear, right? And you never look backwards and you never consider what came before. And you're just always gobbling up the new information and going through it in that order and just speeding through it like that. And you get further and further away from the points that came before and you never look over your shoulder and you never consider what went before. And you never consider the new stuff in light of what came before. Then there'll come a point in the new stuff when you get totally confused because you've got to be keeping in mind all the information that came from before. You have to keep looking over your shoulder. Down into the depths of the forward stuff. You're going to be finding stuff that, material that if you don't have a heightened awareness of what came before, you won't be able to handle that, and you get all gobbledygook in your mind.
Okay. We're up to page 50. 군다데 타녀도 군다 메세 라면 지키 마레 세고 깨자 올레버데 유에세 라버데 이나 전 담버메 이 강을 깨자 데레 디 깨자디 그러니까 군다
So the Geshe-la wraps up the meaning of the quotation from the abbreviation at the end of page 49. You know, the whole point of bringing up that quotation was to emphasize that the mind-only school doesn't mean it literally when they say constructs don't exist. Okay, obviously they didn't mean that literally, because they went through this whole long story why they do exist, if only nominally. Okay, so the point of that first quotation again has been to emphasize that they cannot have meant it literally when they said that in their own book, right, in the abbreviation, that constructs don't exist. Okay, they must have meant don't exist by definition. Now, when you get up to page 50, line 1, Jethro is going to quote another piece from the abbreviation that has the same intent. This piece is a little bit more difficult. The wording is more difficult. But the point of it is that on line 2, when they talk about membership, and membership generally means consciousness. So in this case, it means a state of mind which is focusing on a certain object. And then it says mikba. Mikba means the object or the yule on which this consciousness is focusing. What is the mikba? What is the object on which this consciousness is focusing? This is a state of mind which is focusing on kundaks themselves. Okay? It's the constructing state of mind which is focusing, or remember that third party between the object and the state of mind? There was a conceptualization there. It is looking upon that conceptualization. And then it says, then there's a dot, dot, dot. There's an I forget the name. Anyway, a lesion, page 3, I'm sorry, line 3 at the end. There's a dot, dot, dot in Tibetan, meaning, okay, all that in the abbreviation, starting with those words, meaning what? That construct, which is the object of consciousness, dot, 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 up to where it starts talking about, oh, page, line 4, okay, page 50, up to where it starts talking about, oh, well, those things do exist in a constructed way, in a mental construct way, even though they don't exist in an ultimate way, they do exist in a constructed way. So there's another example, says Jetson Kapa, where constructs are specifically stated in the abbreviation itself to exist. So when the abbreviation earlier talked about their not existing, it must have meant not existing by definition. And it's not an overrating state of mind to look at constructs which do exist and say they don't exist. To look at constructs that don't exist and say they do exist or something like that. That's not the point here. The point is that you're looking at constructs that don't exist ultimately and saying they do exist ultimately. And then you're attributing something existence where there is no existence. So remember, the whole point here was in a description, I think, of what it is to overrate something. It was, don't look at something that doesn't exist and say it does exist. The point being, don't look at things that don't exist by definition and say that they do exist by definition. That's the point here. And the point of describing in the abbreviation the state of mind which overrates something is not to say, oh, those things, it's not the state of mind that looks at something that doesn't exist at all to think that it does exist. It's rather a state of mind that says, this thing that doesn't exist by definition does exist by definition.
What?
On page 50, line 1 and 2, where we talked about the consciousness which focuses on a certain object, and that object is kuntaks, right? Constructs. The actual wording of the Tibetan here is really, really arcane. You know, it's really obscure. And Geshe-la says, we better come back to this later. You know, we better break down the wording of the Tibetan here, because the wording here is very, very weird. Okay? So he says, we'll come back to that, and we'll break that down, and we'll see why. It simply stated it refers to constructs. Now, how you get constructs out of 2.5 lines of really weird Tibetan, he says, I'll come back to that later. Okay, so make a little mark there, we'll come back to that later. Jetsu Kapa on line 5 of page 50 begins to talk about, he says, look, I'll boil it down for you what they're trying to say, okay? Obviously they're not saying that constructs are such that they don't exist. They're not saying that. They must be saying something else. They must be saying that constructs don't exist ultimately. But you can even talk about it in a more subtle way. Okay. Jetsu Kapa says, I have to admit one thing. When you think about it, for example, if you take the fact that a thing is what it's called, the fact that the thing is the basis of what receives the name that it's given, the fact that the thing is what's called its name, right? The fact that that doesn't exist by definition, right, is true, right? If we said that it did exist by definition, right, the fact that such a thing did exist by definition is non-existent, right? Okay? That is the ultimate thing that emptiness denies. That's the gotcha. That's what emptiness is empty of. What? The fact that something is what is called it naturally, or by definition. That doesn't exist. That is the ultimate thing that emptiness denies. That is what emptiness is empty of. That's what we deny when we speak of emptiness. Now, that particular construct doesn't exist. Okay? Got that. And then when we talk about self-existence of a person, it's the same thing, you know? The idea of some kind of self-existence pertaining to a person that could be self-existent, that also is something that doesn't exist. So you can say there are these two self-natures, the self-nature of objects and the self-nature of people or of persons. We have to admit these are both constructs, and we have to admit that both of those things don't exist at all. But that ain't what the mind-only school is talking about in the abbreviation when they say, if you take the constructs as not existing, right, constructs that don't exist. Okay, it's not talking about that. It's not. There are constructs that don't exist, and they could have been talking about constructs, those constructs which don't exist. But that's not the point here. They're saying, if you focus on those constructs that don't exist, ultimately, and you think that they do exist, ultimately, then you are guilty of overrating. Then you are guilty of a state of mind that sees something there where there is nothing there. But don't mix things up here, says Jetsu Kapa. Don't think that the mind-only school, when they say that constructs don't exist, are talking about those constructs which really don't exist. They're talking about those constructs which don't exist ultimately. They're saying that constructs don't exist ultimately. Now, after all is said and done, you know, even blah, 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 we said everything. Can we say that you can divide constructs into those constructs which really do exist and those which don't exist? But if you come up in a general sense and take them as a group and ask somebody, do constructs exist? You have to say yes, they exist. And how is it that they exist? You're right when you say, yeah, they. You have to say they exist. Okay. Now, but in what sense do they exist, or by what manner do they exist? They exist as a construct of the mind, and they do not exist through some from their own side through some unique way of being of their own. Okay, and that's all. Remember that that's what they mean here when they say, oh, yeah, constructs exist. They exist nominally. Now we've reached a new phrasing in the Tibetan which we have not even touched in this whole book yet. And this is I'm going to need some help with the English, I think. This is the division of things between existing, not, let's give it a new, different word, like labeled, as something labeled, and existing as something substantial. Okay, how's that? Or, I don't like it. How about fabricated? I don't know. Labeled. Existing to... Okay. Exist as labeled and exist substantially. There's a new division here. Okay, a new distinction made. I don't want to use construct because then you'll get confused with the other one. So. It exists as a labeled thing, or it exists as a substantial thing.
That's
not
okay. So I want to try to give you, you know, we got these new phrases. It says, do they exist in English? I said, well, we don't normally go around talking from data, you know, on a day-to-day basis about these things, you know, in English. So, yeah, we're kind of making them up as we go. He says, okay, okay. And so there's this thing called dagya, which we're calling labels. What do you call it? You know, temporarily, we'll call it labels. We'll see if we get it better. Provisionally, we'll call it labels, okay? Those things which exist as labels. So he says, I'll tell you what it means in Tibetan to be the difference. By the way, in many schools, many, many different interpretations of what this means, okay? But anyway, in this interpretation, labeled means those kinds of objects in the universe, such as person. You know, we could take a person. Or let's take a guy. You know, let's take guy. You know, let's take American guy. Okay, we could have taken Tibetan guy, Indian guy, any kind of guy. Let's take American guy. Okay, so in order to think of an American guy, or to get in your mind, to say about a person, this is an American guy, right? For it to come into your mind, this general idea, oh, American guy. You know, for you to have that, first you have to have some kind of picture in your mind
of pieces of the American guy. So maybe it's the American guy's ear, American guy's nose, American guy's mouth, American guy's hand, or something like that. But just before you think American guy, you're having all these pictures in your mind, you know, a nose, a couple of ears, a couple of hands, you know. And then immediately after that, it pops into your mind, an American guy, you know. Any object, or I should say, all of those objects in the universe which are perceived in through that process, which must be perceived through that process, such as American guy, are what we call labels. Okay? Those are what we call, they exist through labels. That's what existing through labels mean. And those things which exist substantially, okay, are described in exactly the opposite terms. You take that description of things that exist through labels, and you just flip-flop it, and that's how you can get to the idea of what it means for something to exist through, exist substantially. So what it means is, those objects in the universe, for which to think of them, you don't have to first think of something else. You know, you don't have to first think of some other object such as their parts in order to have a mental picture, or in order to conceptualize them. You conceptualize them all at once, by themselves, without having to first go through some other process of conceptualizing the moment before certain pieces of them or something like that. It's just something that can be conceptualized in your mind wholly, immediately, without going through any process of perceiving other things first and then ending it. Those are what we call existing substantially, things that exist substantially. All those constructs, right? Things that belong to the mind only category of constructs. And here, by the way, I'm talking about those which do exist. Okay, I'm not talking about the constructs that don't exist, okay? That are non-existent things. But those constructs which are existing things, right? They exist through labor. Those things exist through labor. They are such that we call them tanyo, or existing through labor. They're of that category of things. And then when the text goes on, starting around the fifth, sixth lines from the top, page 50, it's talking about this. Now, don't forget that we're talking about constructs of the type that do exist. Okay? Constructs of the type that are existing things. Okay? When you describe those, you are blocking two things about them and you're establishing two things about them. What are you blocking? You're blocking the idea that they could exist substantially or that they could exist ultimately. Okay? So you are denying that they could exist substantially or that they could exist ultimately. And when you deny those two things, you thereby affirm that there are two other things. What? That they exist through labels and that they exist nominally, only nominally. So that they exist through labels or exist nominally. Those are the correlations here. So that's what the text is saying here when it talks about Tanya Yu, but that's right in the middle of page 50.
Line eight.
Yeah. Now, Desikop is taking off on discussing three positions that other people have expressed that he has a problem with. Okay, so he says, therefore, those people who go around saying that the mind-only school says that constructs don't have either truth or neither reality applies to constructs. Okay. Those people who go around saying neither reality applies to constructs. Now, what two realities are they talking about? They're talking about ultimate reality and deceptive reality. Okay, and those who go around saying that neither one applies to constructs are wrong. Now, you can't go around saying, by the way, we would say, you can't go around saying that it's neither true of constructs that they exist ultimately, and neither is it true that they exist nominally. Some people go around saying that the mind-only school says that, Jethro Kapp is saying, he's about to attack them, right? Now, some people go around saying that, you know, constructs, neither truth applies to constructs. They are neither something that exists ultimately, nor are they something that exists nominally. Then these same people go around saying about, and then they go around saying of dependent things or changing things that they do exist nominally but they don't exist ultimately, and that the mind-only school thinks that. They got that one wrong too. Okay? And then they go on saying about emptiness or totality that it does exist ultimately. Now that one happens to be correct. Okay? So they got these three ideas. I'll try to repeat this. They go around saying that the mind-only school says that constructs don't exist nominally and they do exist ultimately. They got that reference, right? And then they go around saying about dependent things that they don't exist ultimately and they do exist nominally, which is reversed. And then they go around saying about emptiness or totality that it does exist ultimately, and there they got it right.
Yeah.
And who is it that Jethro Kapp is accusing of saying this, right, of these three positions? That's in page 50, line 8. He says, Gongdel Ki Dechen means, in some great commentaries to the sutra in which the Buddha explained the intent of the sutras, right? The commentary in which the Buddha explained the intent of the sutras. In some great commentaries. So Geshe-la says, this is referring then to the original Sanskrit commentaries in the Dengir on that sutra. And in those commentaries, these three positions have been expressed.
So
on page 50, line 4 from the bottom, he says, this is not the intent of the sutra on the intent. Okay, he's kind of making a point. You know, this is not the intent of the sutra on the intent, is it? You know? Because in effect, what they're saying in the first case is that constructs don't even exist. You see, because they're denying them with regard to both of the realities. They're saying they don't exist as something ultimate, and neither do they exist nominally. So in effect, what they're saying is that the mind-only school is saying that these things don't even exist, that constructs don't exist. They got that wrong. And then secondly, when you go along and say that the mind-only school says that dependent things don't exist ultimately, but do exist nominally, Then you've got a problem. This is not the intent of the sutra on the intent. These two are not the intent of the sutra on the intent.
What is this? Yes. Tanti karasan dodi gomba ma yinsi. Dodi gomba minos. Chikja. Tanti dodi gomba yi dejin ji arwa. Kui nala jangola ma tonga ma ji. Nalo lo yon di sa. Tanti ta miti ba mongo chi. Kui nala miti ka mongo chi. Kura nge hap ba. Kema re. Hari tona al dodi gomba yi dejin kui nala. Shiro tundu tuba si. Mari karta shiro tundu tuba si. Yuare. Shiro tundu tuba yuare.
Okay,
Shirotan Tupa de Yue Sung Shia, Ta Ting Yi Chik Tik Ma Sung Aas Chik Shia Ma Re.
Jetakapa is starting a process by which he will start to point out inconsistencies in the great commentaries in the Tengyur on the Sutra of the Intended Sutras, right? He will start now to address, he's throughout his text, he's going to be saying, you know, there's this inconsistency or this kind of contradiction that's brought up within the great commentaries in the Tengyur on that Sutra. For example, he says, here's an inconsistency that they talk about. Those commentaries on that sutra, which states the intent of the sutras, they say that the mind-only school says that there do exist objects which exist outside of ourselves. Okay, and I want to explore that word in English. I think I have to work on that. I'm not totally comfortable with that, but provisionally, let's say that that's what they're saying. Okay, that there do exist objects outside of ourselves. Okay, that there do things. There are things which exist as external objects. Okay, whereas Arya Asanga, in his various commentaries, in his whole exposition, in his whole presentation on the mind-only school, denies that the mind-only school agrees that there do exist anything as things as external objects. So there's a big contradiction there. Master Asanga is the innovator who's brought the mind-only school's system into our world and explained it in our world. And throughout his exposition on the mind-only school's position, he says, they don't accept that anything could exist externally, outside of ourselves. Whereas these great commentaries to the Sutra on the Intended Sutra keep saying that they do believe in such objects. So just there's one big inconsistency.
Yeah, I like that.
His life says, we'll get to later what they mean when they say something exists as an external object or not. I think it's a little harder than it seems. I don't think it's quite as what it seems. I think it's been misunderstood. So what it means for something to be an external object, we'll get into
later.
We'll just take it right now as the way it says it.
Tan che ti tan tan ta gongde ki de jin kajik tie kui na la den zan lo la chiro tun ki la so se korang ki de xian wo ar ba te do de gongde ki gong ba re xian ma pa ba ton ni ki ti ti na la ten da wo yin ding xi ku ni ya de yin ding xi ba na ti ti su gongde chang de chiro me pa ju ne de chiro tan de me pa de ju pya qīnāṅ kī sūṅdhīṅ kūṅdhā sū shēpā tāṅ kāl tāgī dhērē tāṅ tāṅ kārā tāṅ tōdhī kōṅdhīṅ kī dējīṅ kāchī kī dējīṅ kūy dējīṅ sī tī pējā kūy nāṅ lā tōdhī kōṅdhīṅ kī kōṅbā kōlā shīrū tūṅ tūpā sētī nē sī kūyā mārī yōsī lā kōrē kōrē nāṅ lā shīrū tūṅ tūpā yōsī tāṅ tē kīrāṅ sē tōdhī kōṅdhīṅ kī kōṅbā yīn sēm jikī mī dūgū sāṅ gālā mā tāṅ gālā mītī kā kārā tāṅ pāpā tōmī kī tīk tī sē tōṅ pējā kūy nāṅ lā Bodhi Gondi ki lung thang ni shiru tu tu pati me chini maa to shi yata tingi gyala song aa shik gyala
And then Jetakapa, he starts his attack on page 50, fourth line from the bottom at the end of the line. And he says, look, when those great commentaries on the sutra, on the intent of the sutra, you know, they said that sutra was saying that the mind-only school says that things don't exist, things cannot exist external to ourselves. External objects don't exist. Objects don't exist as external objects. And he says, they say that the meaning of that sutra is that things can exist as external objects. Okay, but Arya Sangha, when he starts explaining that same sutra, and Arya Sangha is not just explaining the sutra, he's taking pieces of the sutra out of the sutra and saying, okay, here's where the sutra says this, here's where the sutra says that. He actually quotes the sutra to establish a position that says, that there are no objects that exist external to ourselves. Okay, so there must be a problem here. There has to be a contradiction here. They're taking that sutra to mean that external objects do exist. He's taking that same sutra, actually utilizing the wording of the sutra with a long presentation in a book called Pektu. I don't know if that's in Sanskrit. Yana Samuchaya. Okay. Some kind of Yana Samuchaya. Okay, it's called a compendium. Let's call it the compendium. Okay, he's taking that same book in his book called the compendium. He actually takes the specific passages from that sutra to show that the mind-only school doesn't believe that things can exist external to
ourselves.
Seems like it'd be kind of a good point at which to explain what they mean when they say external to ourselves.
DT existing externally means
existing externally.
What is a water pot? It's a water pot. It's a water pot.
Okay. What is a water pot? It's a water
pot.
Just kidding.
ただ、チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、ただのチュロスは何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場合、単純は何時チュロスの場 이 알아봐. 난저 집이 오마라 집 맞지다. 도대 집이 오마라. 다 도대 집 오마라 집 맞대야 그거. 저로 들을 밖에 내 게임 거지.
아 도대 집
오마라 집 맞지다. 저로 들을 밖에. 도대 집 봐서 도대 와다. 잡어 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 실 라미엔기 오마 맞대라 도대 집 맞지. 도대 왜 저로 들을 밖에 내 게임 알아봐. 다 내 도대 집 오마라 집 맞대야 그거. 오마 탄주와 내 내 배야. 제 원두다 오마 비 그
Classical schools of ancient India, right? We got the Abhidhamma school, which is called the Detailist, then we have the Majjhima school, the Sutras, and then we have the Mainoni school, and then we have the Middle Way school, right? Now, let's examine these four to see who it is that believes in external objects and who it is that doesn't believe in external objects, okay? So, to put it simply, the first two do believe in external objects, okay? The Detailist and the Sutras both believe in the existence of external objects, okay? Then as you go up through the school systems, when you hit the mind-only school, they say, we don't believe in external objects. They say, nothing exists as an external object, okay? Then when you get to the Madhyamika Prasangika, the consequence group within the middle way school, they again start saying, yes, external objects do exist. Okay, so these two and the top half of this one believe that external objects do exist. Okay, then what about the lower half of this Madhyamika school? Okay, that's called the independent school, or the Svatantrika, right? Not to be confused with Svatantrika, which is the second school. Inside of there are two clans, okay? There are two further divisions of the independent group. There are those which kind of hang with the sutras, and there are those who hang with the mind-only school. They're called Dodechipa, which means act similar to a sutras, and then Nyandrachipa, which means act similar to a yogin, meaning that's another word, that's another way of describing the mind-only school. Mind-only school has two names, you know, and one of them is a chicken muffin, like mine only, and the other is, what's it called? Yogacara. Those who act yoga, okay, but what that means is a whole other story. So anyway, in the lower half of the Madhyamika school, there are two flavors. There are two subgroups, okay? In the group called independent group within the mind-only school, there are two subgroups. Those two subgroups are called those who side more with the sutras and those who side more with the mind-only school. So naturally, those who side more with the sutras say there do exist external objects. Those who side more with the mind-only school say there don't exist external objects. So how many groups you got saying the external objects don't exist? You got the mind-only whole school, and you got the mind-only tendency subgroup within the group called the independence of the middle way school. But those two groups say that no external logic exists. Now, last point to be made before we go on is that what the lower two schools say when they mean, I'm sorry, what they mean when they say external logic do exist, and what the Madhyamika Prasangika school group means when they say external logic do exist, completely different things.
他唱用的他阿里用啥关系了他就是他们他阿拉都来了不是差不多他是那个让读的吧他说的那个是写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写吧写 Marantha
We'll start from the easiest point, okay? We'll start from the easier place to start, okay? So consider the Mighty Nikapasa consequence group among the middle ways. What do they mean when they say external objects to exist? Okay, they're talking about, for example, physical matter, okay? You can divide things into, your sense powers, which are taken in, they are physical matter, and they are your sense organs, okay? They are taken in by your facility state. They are taken in by your mind state. They are subsumed by your consciousness. Okay, that's how it's said in the Abhidharma, and that's the wording that Krishna says. They are subsumed by your mental stream. They are subsumed by your consciousness. Then there are what we would call external objects, external visual objects, for example, like trees, walls, different objects outside of yourself that are external, but there are also internal visual objects, okay, that are subsumed by your consciousness. Like you can see your arm, for example, okay. So those are subsumed by your awareness. Your arm is something that you can see, which is subsumed by your awareness. A tree is something that you can see, which is not subsumed by your awareness. And that's the distinction in the Prasangika between internal and external, okay. And then he says you can apply that to the other senses as well. Sounds that are existing, the sound of a river, the sound of a door closing, other sounds like that, those are external to yourself. They are not subsumed by your consciousness. And the same with smells, taste, and tactile objects. Okay, there are those which are external, which are not subsumed by your consciousness, and there are those which are internal, which are subsumed by your consciousness. So that's, to put it, the Madhyamika Prasangika idea of what it is to exist externally and internally is very simple. It's not like some deep philosophical concept, okay, just like that. It's something very basic. Is it or is it not, something subsumed by your senses? And if it's not, then it's external. If it is, it's internal. That's all. Be careful when we talk about in the Madhyamika Prasangika school about the distinction between external and internal. I don't mean to say that everything that's not subsumed by your consciousness is automatically what they would call an external object. So for example, there are unchanging objects, for example, empty space, that is not subsumed by your consciousness. That's not part of that's not something that's part of your what we call you. It is external to your consciousness. But I'm not saying that because it's not subsumed by your consciousness, it's automatically what the Madhyamika Prasangika school is describing as external. When they say external, they're talking about changing things. They're talking about functional things. And more specifically, they're talking about physical matter. Okay? They're talking about all kinds of physical matter, whether it be something you see, taste, hear, smell, feel. They're talking about physical stuff which is outside of you. They're talking about changing things. And they're not talking about just anything that's not consumed by your consciousness. I just clarified something, you know. When they say external, they're referring to the physical matter in a general sense. Because remember the word suk in Tibetan can refer to visual objects alone or to physical matter as a whole group. And he says, yeah, I'm talking about physical matter as a group. That which is not consumed by a consciousness is described in the money because of the external. Okay, and the money makes about the giga? It is external. It's not what they mean when they are talking about whether or not objects exist externally. Looks to me like you're trying to make every external thing into what they are talking about when they say things are
external. Is that a distinction between them?
To say it succinctly, the lower two schools' idea of what it means for something to exist external to ourselves is very simple. And they are exactly the same. Their idea is exactly the same. They say if a thing is a composite of impartible, of indivisible atoms, then that's what makes it an external thing. Once something is a composite, for example, this house, once it's a composite of indivisible atoms, then it's
what we call something that exists external time.
What do they mean when they say a composite of partless atoms or something like indivisible particles or something like that? They look at a construct like this house, okay? This house has been built up out of cement, bricks, stones, and different objects like that. But if you took like one of those bricks and you broke it down, just one of those bricks that makes up this house is a collection itself of many tiny particles. And if you took those little particles and you broke them down further, then there'd be even smaller particles. You take those particles down, break them down further, until finally you get to very, very, very fine particles. I think it's what you guys are talking about when you those Western scientists are looking at something and they find this very small thing. They also are asserting in these first two schools that there is something like an atom, you know, that there's some kind of atom, and based on the infinitesimally small, very, very small particles, then all other physical matter is a construct of these little atoms. Now, in the mind-only school as well, they accept the concept of an atom, of a tiny building block of all things, of an ultimate, you know, of the mummy, granddaddy building block of all things. They believe that there is such a thing, but there's a difference in the way the mind-only school use those particles in the way in which the first two schools use those particles. The first two schools say you can get down to a particle that has no size. Partless means that, indivisible means that, it has no size. And you take these little particles that actually have no size, and you can build everything else out of them. And then the minoical says, no, we don't believe in that kind of thing. You know what I mean? We believe in atoms, but we don't believe that there's atoms that don't have any size. Again, we're talking about that granddaddy of all building blocks. You know, it's kind of hard to think about it. If you take a house, you got a whole house. You know, I just try to make it easier for you. I took one brick, okay, one little clod of stuff, you know, and we're looking at that and we're saying, okay, it's not so hard to think that that's been made of little particles, and that those little particles have other little particles, and those little particles have other little particles. And then ultimately, when you get down to the bottom, granddaddy of all particles, in the first two school systems, this is something that doesn't have any size.
What do you want? That is, just a tendency, you can't come, but there are children. Stop, there was drama. Whom they will love to the today, Chame, Stark Beach, Rules, maybe. Tell up with the children. Oh, just a problem.
So, to put it very, very simply, to put it very, very concisely and very basically, in the first two schools, in the DTLS school and the Fisher school, what they mean when they say something exists as an object external to itself is that it's a hunk of stuff that's made of lots of these little particles that don't have any size. That's all.
로벤 차라 가려나 도대체 지금 말 안 주마요 와 도대체 지금 말 안 주면 치료 좀 도와요 송자 사태 제가 마왔다 가려 만나 도대 아니 한테 랑랑 시켰어 네 수태 강가다
Fifth targeting, well, get them in down. Then you get to the subgroup called the ones who are tending towards the sutras, among the group called the independents, among the school called the middleweight. Okay? Those guys have an idea of what it means to exist, for something to exist external to ourselves, which is a little bit similar to the idea of the first group. That seems to be a mind gun, right? Saying it has some similarities to the idea of what it is to exist external to ourselves as presented in the first
group.
This is kind of difficult, but in the lower two schools, they are saying that for something to exist external to us means that it is a hunk of stuff which is composed of particles which are, in the Tibetan means it's chame, which means partless, right? And I've been translated as something with no size, particle with no size. And then the difference between those two and the subgroup in the independent group within the Madhyamika school, the difference is that these Madhyamikas clarify it a bit by saying, Chokichanme means cannot locate directions on this particle. The particle is so small that it would be impossible to locate any direction. You couldn't look on it and say, this is top, this is bottom, this is north, this is south, okay? So you could say unidentifiable size, a particle without identifiable size, rather than a particle without any size at all. I think that's a distinction, because they say, look, you can't posit a particle that doesn't have any sides at all. You say, I mean, that's kind of, that's crazy. You know, how can you make stuff out of particles that didn't have any sides? What you have to say, rather, is that those hunks of stuff that are composed of particles that don't have any identifiable sides, or sides that could be identified as up, down, north, south, but they're so small that you couldn't identify, oh, this is the top, this is the bottom, or something like that.
What? Huh?
So we take, we're both talking about atomic particles, right? Now give me the difference between partless and not having, and it, literally in Tibetan it's partless and directionless. What's the difference? Pedro K. D. or it, Chichi Dilia, the Chiramawa, the Buddha, the Lulia, Kuran Kuni Chan make him it. Kuni, Luke Jok, the
Nukta,
make him it.
Kilia, Kilia,
Kilia, and it Chichi Dilia, Mun Zin Matube, Chok.
Oh, that's in there, Chicha, Kucho, Chach, Kucha, Cho Chang Yang. Chame, Chang Yu, the Miss Cho Chang Yang.
It's more radical than that. It's more radical than that. More radical than that. Okay. The belief when they say partless, when they say sideless, in the two lower schools, you know, the way I translated your answer, and I hope I did it justice, was you know, the first two schools say that it's so small as to not have a north and a south and an east. You know, partless and deathless. Not having sides meaning not having a north, south, east, or top, bottom. And then the higher school is more subtle, is more reasonable in a way, and they say no identifiable bottom and top, and no identifiable south and north and stuff like that. He says it's more radical than that. Don't think of the concept in the lower two schools as being restricted to direction, directionality or something like that. He says it's more radical than that. It's referring to partless in the sense that in your mind, mentally, you could no longer even conceive of it as being divisible. Okay, you get so small mentally that as you try to imagine splitting it, splitting it, splitting it, splitting it, you get to a point where you just couldn't imagine splitting it further. That's what partless means to them. Partless means to them inconceivable part. You know, partless in the sense of no longer being able to reduce it further mentally. Then you've reached, you know, conceptually a tiniest particle. That even mentally you could no longer think of it as having two parts. Also, if you get it into thinking of it in spatial terms, simply spatial terms, you're going to be into another problem. It's that when they say indivisible, they're also talking indivisible time-wise. Okay, by milliseconds, milliseconds, that this is a particle which about which you could not say first millisecond, second millisecond, third millisecond. It gets so fine and divided mentally so far down, reduced so far down, that you could no longer even conceive of it as happening in a progression of time. It would not have a first second to it, and a second second to it, and a third second to it. It's indivisible also in that sense, not just spatially, but temporally, indivisible parts. So, to get in trouble if you call it side, as I called it, okay, you have to kind of call it partner. Okay, so we better stick to partner. The word part can have a lot of different meanings. You know, part can have global meanings. You could say, just you know, something has a part in India but doesn't have a part in the United States, or doesn't have a part in the United States but doesn't have a part in India. I mean, the word part is pretty big. You know, the word part can have a lot of different meanings. You know, it can mean, it can have global implications. You know, we have a part of this in the United States but we don't have a part in India, something like that. It can be global also. The word part is very tricky. The idea to conceptualize smallest particles. In, you know, when you're a student of Buddhism and you're thinking about what it means in the first two schools for something to be partless, it helps. It's useful for you to think temporally also, because it brings you to a greater appreciation of really how radical this idea is of something that is partless. Now remember that in the lower two schools, they're describing something as existing as an external object, right? External object. When it is composed of these partless atoms, okay? When it is composed of partless atoms. Now the mind-only school comes along to them and says, this is really dumb. You know, you guys are sitting there. How could you take something that was partless and build up all these physical things from that? You know, how can you get hunks of stuff composed of something that is partless? You know, that's totally impossible. That's totally